This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's BREEMILLS, to try a free week on us. Assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently. Hi, my name is Bree Mills, and I am a porn director with a purpose. Now, throughout my career, I have covered just about every niche, and I've created some award-winning films and brands along the way. But now, I'm much more interested in getting to know the real people behind my characters. And that's because I believe adult entertainers can be some of the most powerful role models when it comes to sex ed, consent, empowerment, and wellness. By asking the right questions, our community can really help people better understand themselves. So that's the mission of this podcast. Let's get up close. Anna Claire, hi. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I always love talking to you whenever we are on set together, but this is really fun to like formally be able to spend the next hour or so chatting and getting to know you and getting to talk about stuff that we're always talking about, I think, whenever we are seeing each other. So welcome to the podcast.
Yes, and you don't have to be the director all day.
No.
Make sure everything goes exactly how it is. Well, you did before this, but now we get 45 minutes.
Yeah, we're just talent. We're both just talent. So. Tell me a fun fact about you that I don't already know.
Oh, you might actually like to know this, Bree. I can spin fire.
Okay.
I used to spin fire when I would go-go dance. Used to travel in the Southeast and go-go dance for a little company. And I would spin fire at festivals and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's very fun. A little fun fact about me.
So tell me, like, this is, you're going to have to educate me. So spinning fire is
so. My particular form of spinning fire is called poi. It's P-O-I. It's where you take basically like flammable balls, mm-hmm. and you put them either on chains or a rope that does not burn. And you will spin them around your body and it looks very, very cool. It creates really interesting tracers and it's very cool like geometric shapes in around you. It's very interesting.
Now, how does one build, like, because obviously you need to be a professional or at least trained to do that. So how did you get to a point where you were confident?
You give it a try.
Yeah.
You just give it a try. You have, for me, the main thing I did at first was I braided my hair back to make sure that mm-hmm.
You didn't catch on fire.
Didn't have any loose hairs. Yeah. And I wore clothes that I was okay with just burning a little bit.
Okay.
But you just give it a good try and you keep them moving. But prior to spinning fire, I did it with LED light.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So at least you knew like the kind of the motions, yeah. Right.
I was Excellent. Very comfortable with that.
Well, that is a fun fact. one that I can't match with any kind of cool fun fact on my end. So this whole podcast is about, you know, of course, with Up Close, our new studio, we're really focusing on docuseries and unscripted content that like showcases female pleasure and showcases, you know, female sexual expression. And for me, the most important form of expression is communication. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wanted to really have a dedicated component to that within the studio. So I'm here to get to know all about you, but really, really what you have to share with the world in terms of the, you know, lessons you've learned, the experiences you've had, and the advice that you would give. But let's sort of start by getting to know you a little better, mm-hmm. especially for anyone who's watching or listening who doesn't know you yet, except that you're a professional fire spinner.
Yeah, there you go.
So tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
I was raised, my parents are still together. I was raised in Tennessee in a very Southern household. They were not the most religious people, but prior to my grandparents on my mother's side, her brothers were preachers. Mm-hmm. So technically, I'm the first generation in six generations to not become a minister or mm-hmm. preacher. So my parents were really open-minded. My mom grew up with a very Christian household. My dad, not so much. So they allowed me to explore religion mm-hmm. and myself and the things I wanted to do with my life. The only thing that was said was, you have to get good grades, and it's not are you going to go to college? It's where are you going to go to college? So I grew up with a wonderful family, honestly, and mm-hmm. they're still together, still very happy. They still call me. Well, I talked to my mom on the way here. So yeah, it's, and in kind of a small town. Yeah, it's I think my graduating class was like 400, so not huge, but not super small. And we all grew up together. I knew everyone that I was in school with from kindergarten until high school.
Yeah, so. I had a quite a similar upbringing that way, with a sort of a smaller group of kids that all grew up together. So communication was something that was always really present in your house growing up.
Yes. My mom is an English major mm-hmm. with a writing degree as well. So she was all about words mm-hmm. and using the proper ones and ensuring that we're communicating how we feel in the right way.
How do you think that influenced you, especially as you were, like, you know, went through puberty and were becoming an adult, just having such a foundation of being able to be open and to talk about yourself?
For me personally, growing up in Tennessee, because it is somewhat of a closed-minded, mm-hmm. I mean, somewhat in some places, somewhat not, but, you know, it's a pretty closed-minded state. Mm-hmm. A good example of the type of child I was outside of my home, I went to a Catholic preschool, wasn't mm-hmm. Catholic, but it was the best preschool in town. Yeah. It's the only preschool in town.
My daughter goes to a Lutheran preschool, and it's the same reason.
It's the best preschool in town. But I would get in trouble a lot because I was raised reading the Bible mm-hmm. with my grandfather, and they would say things that were controversial and just direct opposite of what I was told mm-hmm. God was. And I had Bible scripture to prove it. Mm-hmm. So I was a very chatty kid, and I liked to talk about things. And as I got older, that need for debate and to have these conversations that are a little bit more challenging with individuals that might not think the same as me grew. And mm-hmm. it definitely, now I'm very open-minded to understanding how people could think the way that they think and still be good people mm-hmm. is the best way that mm-hmm. I can say it, you know, in their own right.
Yeah.
But it has made me more open-minded and have the ability to talk with these individuals and hopefully open their mind as well.
Yeah.
A little bit. So having that form of communication has really helped me really just round out who I am as a person today mm-hmm. and just how I talk even right now.
What are some of your earliest memories about sexuality, especially in terms of like pop culture or the media, since oftentimes that's sort of people's first taste of that side of our identities?
Well, first attraction to what I saw on television would have to be Shego from Kim Possible. She is so fine. And I was like, wow, that is a very pretty lady. And then to actual sexuality itself, I didn't really understand what that was. I mm-hmm. just knew. I was like, wow, she's like, that's a hot woman. I know. Mm-hmm. I experienced what that was like. And then after that, it was Moulin Rouge, the movie. I was just captivated by it. Every single bit of it, the music, the flair, the women, the men, it was a big sexual awakening for me.
Yeah. So what I always ask this, like, what, when you're thinking about it now, what's the image that stands out in your mind?
For me, two images. I like the one when they're in the jail cells mm-hmm. and they're mm-hmm. singing that song in the jail cells. And then they come out with like the black silhouette in the background. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous. And then also like just that coming down from the chandelier moment. I can't get enough of that. When she's initially presented yep. as just this unattainable, woman that is just viewed as in her sexuality and respected in her sexuality in this way that is just so it's just captivating. She's beyond captivating to these men who just like really capitalizing off the patriarchy's greatest weakness. It's incredible to watch.
So you yourself also are capitalized. So is it, you know, what do you think it's the fact that it was that sort of confidence, the sexual confidence that and respect that she had in that? I know exactly the moment in the scene where Nicole Kidman descends, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's quite a little, like about 20 minutes into the scene, right? When she makes that grand entrance. So was it the fact of like that sort of sexual confidence that really attracted you? Or
it's the fact that these women had a sexuality they were open to sharing with others. And, you know, I might have grown up where Daisy Dukes were popular and blah, 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 but it's that's as close to sexuality as you got there.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to see women saying, no, I'm a woman. I'm sexual. This is something that I'm not ashamed of. This is actually something that I like so much that I can perform and I can make a performance of it. And I just, you know, I really did enjoy that. I still do. It has definitely probably shaped a lot of my decisions as an adult.
So let's talk about, you know, about the sort of development and shaping of your own sexual identity. I mean, it strikes me that, you know, when you were growing up, you sort of had that built-in confidence just from your, you know, from being sort of able to talk and to be curious and to explore that curiosity. And then as you became a young adult, you know, what are some of the milestones that you can think of in, you know, your own development where you came to your own place of confidence? So you had mentioned being attracted to women early on.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that probably raised some questions in yourself, or maybe there was some sort of, you know, any external stimulus that might have told you to be shameful about that or to have second thoughts about that. Maybe walk me through a little bit about, you know, as the young adult Anna Claire emerged, you know, who was she like what would you sort of say are the main aspects of your sexual identity now?
It took a long time for me to understand my own sexuality, I guess. I didn't necessarily, I thought everyone saw women as attractive. I didn't think that that was strange.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that that was odd. I just thought everyone saw men and women as, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Would do both of those. Like, you know, I just, that's, so for a long time, I didn't know that that was different. And then for me personally, I was a cheerleader growing up,
mm-hmm.
which did have a lot of female closeness. I'm an only girl in mm-hmm. my family. So having a lot of women around me is like my first time learning how to do makeup or being taught how to shave or any of these things. So those brought up a lot of questions with girls as well, and that did help shape me as well. And a lot of those, you know, women were adventurous throughout, mm-hmm. you know, the time that I had that. So that was a big part of me learning my sexual identity. And I think after that, I got this friend who we'll call her Jay.
Okay.
I got this friend, and she grew up, she was so wealthy. Like, I grew up in a town that was not the most wealthy, and she grew up so wealthy. Ask for nothing, want for nothing, go to any college she ever wanted, do anything she wanted, could do no wrong. So she was the most promiscuous girl I've ever met in my life. She was fucking everything. And she was open about it, having full weekends at her house with like orgy parties, mm-hmm. this and the other thing, just so much fun stuff. And I became really good friends with her. And she chatted with me about just everything that mm-hmm. she felt and how she was so open with herself and not ashamed of those things. And she really did teach me, oh, there's really a different way to look at this. Like, she's not ashamed of this and she's enjoying herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems, she was, of course, young and going, doing it a little, maybe not the safest options, of course, is what I'll say. But she really did open my eyes a lot. We actually, interestingly enough, she had sex with my brother and I had sex with her brother. Uh-huh. Not in the same evening and not at the same time, but we had kept that secret from each other for a while. And we finally told each other and we were like, ha, you're a slut. I'm a slut. It was like that Spider-Man meme. We were like, ha.
Yeah, everybody's pointing.
Yeah.
Well, and once again, it strikes me that it's another sexually confident woman that you encountered in your life that had an impact on you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, I feel like for me, it was mostly the women that I met in mm-hmm. my life that helped me open my eyes to the lack of shame and lack of disrespect that they received from being themselves. Mm-hmm. And that in a lot of times, those individuals, I wouldn't want to associate with either way. If mm-hmm. they were to judge me on my sexuality or what I happen to do with it, then I probably don't want to hang out with you regardless.
Yeah.
Made it easier on me. I honestly love porn. It mm-hmm. gets rid of a lot of the closed-minded.
Yes.
Right away.
Yeah, it definitely does. So, like, what do you think are some of the biggest myths about, quote-unquote, female sexuality? Because I understand that even saying that is a loaded term, right? Mm-hmm. Because we all have our own interpretations of it. But what do you, when you kind of, you know, look across the spectrum, what really, like, you know, what are the myths you would debunk right away for our watchers and listeners when it comes to, like, female sexuality and expression?
I'm going to look right at the camera for this one. Women enjoy sex. Point blank, period. They enjoy sex. There are women that don't enjoy sex. There are men that don't enjoy sex. Sure, absolutely. But a greater portion of women enjoy sex. And if individuals think that women don't enjoy sex and are still trying to have it with them, then they need to address their own problems. Mm-hmm. But women enjoy sex. They enjoy sexuality. They enjoy porn. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was somebody that had these same experiences and had these same urges growing up and had the same conflict with my own sexual identity and whether it's okay or not and da-da-da, all these masturbation, this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. Women have these same experiences growing up. It's just not as spoken about because of the society that we live in and mm-hmm. the constraints put on women regarding being open about that type of conversation. Where I grew up, in school, during our sexual health class, they said, the first time you have sex, your vagina is a flower. If anyone's seen, I'm trying to remember the TV show, but you'll know what I'm saying if you've seen it. Your vagina is a flower, and then you give it to someone, and if they use it, they're going to crumple it up. And then they're going to give it back to you, and they're going to say, there you go, that's yours, you can't fix it. And then you have to give it to somebody else, and nobody wants a crumpled up flower.
Yeah. So what do you like? So really that what's the message there is what it's that your sexuality belongs to
me.
Their
message.
Yeah. It's like your sexuality belongs to whomever is going to take it and therefore ruin you because of it. So you yes. better hold off until, yes. you know, you find the right person. Yeah,
exactly. And the same concept, a thing that a lot of people might not know, a hymen grows back. Mm-hmm. It's a piece of skin. So when you break your hymen, if you don't have sex for 2 weeks, it grows back. Mm-hmm. It's like skin in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, it grows back just as fast. And it's, so when you break your hymen as your first time having sex, then you didn't lose anything.
Yeah, no. Your flower is not crumbling.
Your flower is good. Yeah. You're good. You're actually, your flower is planted in the ground and it won't stop growing. It's a bush, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I can't get over how people don't realize just how harmful, right? Like, because there's so much fear about, you know, we don't want to talk to younger people about sex because we don't want, you know, X, Y, Z. But then literally that's how you're talking to people about sex. And then you expect everything is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't get over how damaging that is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It absolutely. And even for men as well, it creates like a huge, huge, huge ego and this just taboo thing around sex that they strive for,
yeah,
you know, as a young adult and looking into porn for answers rather than their parents mm-hmm. is just a huge issue. You know, I hate it. It's not my favorite.
No. Well, and like you said, the repercussions are equally harmful for both men and women mm-hmm. in the occasion, right? So like men have that the sort of silent peer pressure that's put on where you need to like, you know, be super rough or super alpha or like anal sex is the first type of sex you should have. Mm-hmm. And like, then, you know, they're trying to just do what they feel is they're supposed to do. And then nobody knows how to talk to each other. And then on the other hand, women are being told that, you know, their precious flower is going to be destroyed. And mm-hmm. so it's like, you know, no wonder people have such hangups, right?
Yeah, it's like Jimmy's already had three girlfriends, right, give it up to him. Why can't you even kiss a girl? It's like, that doesn't make you a man.
No.
At all.
No.
That's not even close to what makes you a man or what makes me a woman.
Yeah.
Like, at all. It's,
so if you were going to be a sex ed teacher for a day, like, yeah, you get free rein on the curriculum for one day, what would be like the top three most important things that you would want to teach people growing up?
Number one, STDs, and understanding of how you get them, understanding of how you get rid of them, and understanding of the ones that you really need to watch out for. Mm-hmm. I would talk about how gonorrhea and chlamydia are like strep throat for your cold. Mm-hmm. And as long as you catch them, just as long as you catch, you know, bronchitis or anything like that, you won't die. You'll mm-hmm. be fine. You'll just get a shot and it'll be gone. I would talk about definitely STDs. Just everything that I know about STDs. Secondly, I would talk about women's pleasure. I think it's a big misunderstanding when men are like, I can't find the clit. Well, like, you can. It's inside of her. The clit is internal as well as external. It's not just that one little button. Mm-hmm. That's just all you can see. You know, that's not true at all. So I would talk about a woman's pleasure and how to actually stimulate a woman. And then I would talk about male stimulation as well. Mm-hmm. Because a thing that just as much as women's masturbating and sexual health as a young adult isn't spoken about, men's problems with erectile dysfunction mm-hmm. throughout their entirety of their life isn't spoken about enough, and how it is difficult for them to figure out what it does for them. So I talk about all three of those things because I think that understanding the risks, understanding your partner, and understanding yourselves are the three ways you can have good, safe, consensual sex. And mm-hmm. consent mm-hmm. before STDs.
Yeah.
Actually, that was in my head, I'd already said that right away. But like, consent, of course. Mm-hmm. So all four things, that's what I'd start out with.
This episode is brought to you by our sponsors at Adult Time, the ultimate subscription platform for premium adult content. With over 55,000 episodes, 300 channels, and new releases every single day, it's everything you'd want in one place. And you can use promo code BREEMILLS, that's BREEMILLS, to try a free week on us. Assuming you are 18 plus, of course, and you can discover how we do porn differently. What, speaking on the subject of consent, it's obviously something that's a big part of our lives within professional adult production and our sets. How do you bring that into your own private life, and how do you kind of use it as a tool to help educate other people? Because, you know, consent is something that's clearly really missing in general education.
Yeah. In my personal life, for me personally, I don't have a lot of personal sex. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be very honest mm-hmm. right now. I am very fulfilled by my job and the sex that I get there. I do enjoy it. And if I want to have personal sex, then I can just do it whenever I want, but I've mm-hmm. not had the need to. But mm-hmm. before that, I'm just very open about it. I don't like fingers inside me, so mm-hmm. I just am very open, and as I say, I would rather have your penis in me than your fingers. Mm-hmm. And that's not too bad.
No.
You know? That no one's been upset about me saying that.
Throw you off
that. Yeah, no one's been too mad about that at all, or upset at all. So I just talk about it. And for me, those uncomfortable conversations that these, you know, that I have with my partners always opens conversations of what they like. And they might not have felt comfortable telling me that. So, and I personally haven't experienced having my boundaries set and having someone not respect them in my personal life recently. Mm-hmm. But if that were to happen, then wonderful sign for me to go.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Mm. Like you said, it's a pretty cut and dry decision.
My vibrator works great at home. Like, I'm good.
So how has your own sexuality evolved over time? And maybe tell us a little bit about how you ended up working within the adult space.
Well, I started out by doing adult modeling. I started by regular modeling, but mm-hmm. eventually I wanted to do adult modeling because I just liked it so much more. The clothes mm-hmm. they were putting me in, I hated. It was not as artistic or fun. And then I started doing like nude in some way, erotic modeling. And then it became adult with just solo stuff, mm-hmm. nothing with other people. And then after that, oddly enough, I had a comedian friend that I did Vines with.
Yes, back in the day of Vines. Yeah.
Yeah, we used to do these like adult themed Vines that were, we laughed at them. And he said, he had a Snapchat, which he would record behind the scenes on with like just simple stuff, boobs out, whatever. And he said, you really should open a Snapchat. Like you really, really should. And I thought about it for a long time. And I was working at a place serving and I was off that day and my manager called me and left me like two voicemails saying, if you don't come in right now, you're going to get fired. I know you're off today, but we need you and you don't have enough hours for this week anyway. So, and I was busy. I had things that I had to do. I had my family I was going to go see. So I never went back, opened a premium Snapchat that night and I made close to $10,000 in about 48 hours.
So you really did not need to go fulfill your hours for that week. Yeah.
And since then, I haven't worried for money or financially or anything, which I'm extremely grateful for every day for adult, which has given me, you know, the ability to never have to worry about that. And it just kind of opened up, oh, sexuality is fun. This is a lot of fun. At the time, me and my partner would just record stuff together. We would do kinky things that we thought were fun, like blowjob in the car somewhere, sneaky. Of course, no one could actually see, but the way we were portraying it was like people could see. And that was enough for me mentally to be very turned on. It was kind of like a role play.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. And yeah, it just kind of went from there. And I was always very open, like with my relationships as well. So having sex with other people and incorporating other people was never really an issue for me. I'm not not a very jealous person. I don't think just because someone says they love me, I should have ownership of their genitals.
Right.
It doesn't make much sense to me. And no one can own mine either. Yeah. But yeah, so just to, after that, I really just started exploring safely everything that I wanted to do sexually, which, you know, at the time when I was younger, I had probably explored these things in a not so safe way. But now that when I got into adult, it really just opened like, oh, I really can do everything I want to do. And I don't have to say, oh, I wish I could do that. But I don't know, four guys that are down to have their dicks out in the same room.
Yeah.
Like, I really wish I could do that. So porn really did help me quite a bit with just being able to do the things I want to do in a safe environment and figure it out, like have an agent actually set it up.
Yes, there you go.
Kind of cool.
So I have to ask, so pre-porn, you and your partners for kind of kink and for fun would sort of film effectively like little porn scenes just that you keep for yourself? All right, so in a way you were sort of used to the idea of being watched without being watched. So, but when you actually went from taking it from being just like, you know, a fun element of your sex life into like, oh no, now people are watching. Was there any, like, how did that moment feel for you?
Oh, it still gets me going.
Yeah.
It still gets me going. It's my thing. I am, I love it so much. I know that even, it doesn't matter that you guys are so, you've been doing it so many times and you've seen so many people masturbate. Whatever. I'm still performing. Y'all are still watching. It does it for me. I still have my thing. So I love an audience. I love, I love it. I know it might sound odd, but even if like I'm doing a solo scene, like later on, you all engaging in it, even with the camera or as a part of it, for me, in my head, kind of like an orgy.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little orgy. Y'all just aren't involved.
Yeah. No, we are just all respectfully off on the sideline.
And cheering.
With your robe, bathrobe for after, cheering you on. Yeah.
So, I mean, it still gets me going. I love, I'm very an exhibitionist at heart, but it's just, I always want to do it safely and in the morally correct way, and porn allows me to do that.
So, yeah. What are some of the like other aha moments you've had since entering porn in terms of like recognizing, you know, your own sexuality? So obviously, like exhibitionism was something that you felt beforehand, but like amplified when it became like what you did. What else did you learn from getting into porn when it came to your own sexual identity?
What else did I learn? Well, I think that I learned that I do have, I mean, with porn, sometimes you have to turn it on. So I learned that I definitely have the ability to like focus on multiple different things and still be turned on mentally and physically. That was something I didn't know about myself.
I don't think, yeah, that's really something you have to experience to recognize.
Never had to do that. Yeah. Never had to like keep my peripheral vision and focus through the camera still, but I've learned that I'm able to do that multitask really well when it comes to sexually. And, you know, I didn't do a lot of anal before. I've learned that I enjoy anal, but I'm very particular with my anal. I have to do it with someone I'm extremely attracted to. Mm-hmm. So I've learned that about myself. There's just a lot of little things that I've learned that I want to do and want to try. And a lot of things I've learned that I don't like as well, you know, that I thought, well, maybe I'll like that. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
No, didn't like that. So it's been a really wonderful way to test out everything and just really hone in on who I am and what I like. I learned also, I thought I was submissive when I first got into porn. I was like, no, I'm a submissive person. No, I'm not.
Oh my gosh. Are you becoming the sexually confident woman of your dreams when you're growing up? Yeah,
exactly.
But do you feel like that it sort of is like a bit of an embodiment of the, you know, Nicole Kidman coming down in the chandelier? Like that's how you feel now when you're going into the different sort of sexual experiences that you set up for yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I do feel like I am a woman who respects myself and has a sexual identity that I'm proud of and that I am putting on display and performing in a way that I can be proud of in the end of it. So, you know, I definitely do feel like I am the 2023 Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge. I'll take that comparison, Brie. Thank you.
Good.
My head's going to be too big for the room in a second.
Well, I know that if we ever do a Moulin Rouge inspired project, then like I know who to call.
So fun. Oh my God. I'm drooling.
So the new studio up close is all about showcasing authentic experiences and celebrating female pleasure. Can you tell me a little bit about how that vision resonates to you personally as a performer, but also as your own content creator in the adult space? Like, what is important about showcasing authentic female pleasure for you?
I think it's the showcase. You just said it right there. Having it be authentic female pleasure. A lot of porn that I've created over the years, I've been, I don't know how they cut this out in post. I really have no idea how they do this. But the director will be like, come again, come again, come again. 30 seconds later, come again, make this one louder. And I'm just like, this is not realistic.
Yeah.
I'm not even touching myself.
Yeah.
We barely had time to catch our breath. He's taking it, you know, he's trying to give me a second. It's just... it's being authentic and actually allowing women to get themselves to orgasm and giving them the tools to do that as well. Because a lot of women, it's very normal, but a lot of women have trouble orgasming internally. So having the tools to orgasm naturally, however you feel the most comfortable and the most efficient, is what we'll say, having those tools is very important. So I think that you guys doing what you're doing would not only help women understand that, yeah, a lot of women are just like you. Sometimes we just lay there. We're in the same position. We're enjoying it. I'm moving. I'm touching. And that's it. And then other times, it might take a little bit longer. Maybe I need to move around. Maybe I need to say things to stimulate myself. Mm-hmm. And then for men, it also helps them understand, oh, she likes that and she likes that.
Yeah.
They both... wow.
Yeah. And it's not a race to the finish.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The finish doesn't always happen sometimes. And that's also okay. Yeah.
She didn't even put anything inside of her and she came. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's, I think it's helpful for both things. And also, you know, it's hot porn.
Well, yeah. Right. If it's close, as close to real as possible, since obviously there are still cameras, it is still a set there. It is still constructed. The better. One of the things that I've been really pleasantly surprised to sort of see in talking with our subscribers over the last few years is just how important now the concept, and obviously this is from their perspective, but the idea that the woman is actually enjoying herself. There's a good percentage of people who can't get off unless they believe, you know, in that who they are watching is actually enjoying themselves, which is, you know, it's great to see that. And it also kind of, you know, identifies the great paradox of, you know, directors saying, okay, let's roll back, let's come again, let's come louder. Because we on one hand are sort of feeding the fantasy of what a female orgasm is, but also trying to be more authentic to the nuances of female orgasm. So our hope is that, you know, by just making it real as we can, that, you know, it'll help educate and also, you know, help people that are looking to watch people actually enjoying themselves and all of that stuff.
And I will say it's a small step forward for everyone that people are saying that they want to see women actually enjoy themselves. And yes, that's the only thing they can
get is,
to.
Yeah.
That is a huge step for us.
It is. No, it is. And it's cool because it's like the question that we asked is sort of what to you, you know, like, why would you stick around? Like why keep your subscription? Oh, it's the quality of the scenes. Okay, so what, when we say quality, that's very subjective. So what does quality mean to you? Oh, it's the fact that I can believe that she's enjoying herself. That is actually the indication of quality. Mm. So all the more reason to like keep delivering on that, because it is also going to be quite educational to people that realize, okay, so, you know, it doesn't mean a big, loud orgasm necessarily, or like you said, providing the right tools. So what are the right tools for Anna Claire in today's day and age to help set up a really good orgasm?
I am all about clit stimulation. I love my Hitachi on full blast, and I enjoy keeping it completely still, like it's a massage gun going at like the worst knot in my back possible. Yeah. I just fucking, so I get cramps in my arm. But for me, I love Hitachi. I love clitoral stimulation. I can come from insertion. Mm-hmm. It takes a certain stroke for me to be able to come to completion. But most of the time,
it's the good old Hitachi.
Yeah, most of the time it's the good old Hitachi. If I bring it in, doesn't matter what he's doing. He can actually be completely still, and I will come tested it.
Yeah.
I'll come so hard.
Yeah.
He'll have to pull out because there's some push going back.
Yeah. Now, was the Hitachi something that you discovered upon entering the world of porn, because like it's sort of in everybody's setback, or was that something that you knew going into porn?
I was really open with sex toys long before I ever started even, you know, recording myself in any form or fashion. Yeah, I me and sex toys were real tight. I tried a lot of stuff, you know, that was a big part of my sexuality, and figuring out things I like and don't like was doing them alone for myself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big thing that a lot of women should be able to do and should say that they've done, because if you don't like it with yourself, you probably will hate it with somebody else.
It's you don't want to debut that when you're doing that big gangbang or whatever.
Yes. Backing out is backing out is like, whoa, sorry. You could in your room. It's easy.
So with nowadays. One of the questions that I love to ask, you know, we talked about kind of the origins of your desire earlier and the kind of Moulin Rouge scene and Kim Impossible. But nowadays, what are you thinking about to get yourself off? What goes through your head now?
What I like now is connection. And mm-hmm. that's going to seem like the most non-porn answer ever. But I like making my partner feel like we have yeses and nos that we say in the mm-hmm. beginning. And my number one yes that I always say is I want to have a real sexual experience with mm-hmm. you, and the camera happens to be there. Mm-hmm. So that is what I like the most, is having a real sexual experience where I do feel like I am doing things that this individual enjoys and they're receptive to it. Mm-hmm. And I also am the same to them, and we're both enjoying ourselves and having something very real. Because even in personal sex, like, let's take porn out of it.
Yeah.
Even in personal sex, it can be very not real. It can be very just, this is for the feeling, this is for pleasure, this is for this, but it's not a real connection. Mm-hmm. And two human beings doing something, just the most animalistic thing that we can do with one another. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets me off the most. Eye contact, especially, is big. I like hands. I like mm-hmm. being touched. I like hearing their breath, like just them releasing the tension within them and enjoying the experience.
That's sort of action and reaction.
Action and reaction.
Yeah.
That's what
gets, I feel you on that for sure.
Action and reaction, both ways.
So what, for viewers that we have who are either going to be watching this or listening to this, who, you know, are having their own feelings of insecurity or questions about their sexual identities, what is the best advice that you can give them?
What I said earlier would try things for yourself. It's going to be very, very helpful. Just figuring out what your body enjoys and in general before you try it with other individuals. And then beyond that, if you find out you enjoy those things, finding a community of people that can support you during your process. For me, that's what helped me the most. Mm-hmm. The women in my life, the people that I got to meet in college, like just that one friend that introduced me to Snapchat.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of people in my life that were very supportive of my sexual identity, regardless of what it was. Mm-hmm. So finding even one individual to say, no, that's cool. It's very helpful to allowing yourself to say that. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, understanding that it is really okay for you to sexually be whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Morals are a made-up complex, just like time. I mean, it's really a made-up thing. It's a thing that humans made up to keep us in line.
Yeah.
Which I have my own set of morals, but that doesn't mean that you or somebody else might have different morals. You cannot hold yourself to the moral constraints of somebody else's conscience and expect you to be able to understand that. Like, that's not your own conscience. It's not even your own thought process. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that are on that stream of thought that probably think that what you're doing is blah, blah. But it's a stream of thought. They're just riding it. You can always get on another one. There's plenty of rivers all over. Get on a different stream. Like, that's what I feel about it. Having a community and then just also understanding that you're not liable for someone else's conscience.
No, no. You just need to be liable for your own.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it.
So my last question for you today is there a particular fantasy that you have not been able to live out yet?
Public gangbang DP. Public gangbang DP. In public, in like a bar where everybody watches me and I get fucked like on the table and then like walked around and like, look how good she's doing. She's such a fucking slut. And then they DP me and that's it. Yeah, that's, I think about that all the time.
So, okay. First, I could say there's multiple levels to that from a compliance perspective, we wouldn't be able to help you out with.
At least
the bar setting.
We'd have to hire everyone. I have to hire everyone. Everyone's getting hired.
Okay, but
or like a store. Like a store where I'm getting changed, and then it's like, well, look at how hot you are. Here's a penis. Would you like it? And I'm able. Yeah, you know, it's just natural.
So what about that is? Why is that the fantasy right now? Let's psychoanalyze that quickly before we wrap today.
Performance. I love performance. Mm-hmm. I love that. I've touched on that already. Haven't done a DP yet. I love trying things that I haven't tried before. I think it's really fun and interesting. Plays into my exhibitionist thing. It being in a place where only adults are that can consent to it also plays into my just feeling, I can do this. This is allowed.
Yeah, safe
space. So it contributes to the safe space. And, you know, that's the type of porn, it might be weird, but that's the type of porn that I've kind of always been drawn to, is the ones where a woman is openly allowed to just be and do whatever she wants and can use anything that she wants to get to that point. And I think that's great. That for me, that's what I think gets me the most. And back to Moulin Rouge, it is for me, the definition of a woman being competent in her sexuality and just being allowed to do whatever she wants with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that's the ultimate definition of confidence. There you go. Thank you so much, Anna Claire. It was amazing to have you today, to be able to talk about this stuff, to be able to share your experiences, to be able to talk about Moulin Rouge, which I'm probably going to go rewatch now. I'll never be able to watch it the same way again. And also, you know, when I hope that the public DP gangbang consensual space, self space, restaurant or bar or changing room. I hope that comes true because that sounds like for you a very good time.
It sounds so fun to me. Yeah, no, it really does. And thank you so much, Bree. Thank you to everybody at Adult Time and everybody watching at home and continuing to enjoy this type of content. It allows us to have these conversations in a way where it's easily digestible for viewers. And I just really enjoy that not only Adult Time giving us this platform and you, Bree, giving us this platform, but everyone watching this at home. I really appreciate you doing this. It's, you know, it's a big deal for us to be able to have a place to share this education that we've gotten.
Thank you so much for checking out today's conversation with Anna Claire Clouds. It was such a delight to have her on the podcast, to hear about her story, her insights, her advice, and the importance of sexual confidence. If you want to support Anna Claire, the mission behind this podcast, all of us, please, you know what to do. You can like, you can comment, you can subscribe to our channel. All of our social links are listed in the episode description below, so please make sure to check us out. And until next week, let's keep it real. Let's keep the conversation going. Thank you so much.